This is CliffCentral.com.
Richard, are we on track with the financial pack for my presentation to the board next week?
Well, hopefully. The team's very short-staffed, and it's taking such a long time to find a suitable financial manager for the division. We're way behind on all our forecasts and reporting.
Why don't you speak to the finance team? They're a consultancy that can help you with an experienced interim financial manager. You can have somebody to help you almost immediately. They'll hit the ground running with no long-term contracts and no upfront placement fees.
Go to thefinanceteam.co.za.
Welcome to the business section of our Business Masterclass. I'm Richard Angus, CEO of the finance team, your part-time financial executive solution. Joining me in studio as part of our panel is Safir Boulay of New Habits, Making Shift Happen.
Hi there.
And Leandi Streeta, business coach and guide from Raise Corp.
Thank you, Richard.
Our guest on the line is Mosidi Modise, founding curator of the Global Shapers Stellenbosch Hub, and in studio, Greg Sarandos. Greg has spent 2 years in Silicon Valley working with startups on messaging and go-to-market strategies. He's now back in SA working with local technology and disruptive companies on their marketing strategies. So thank you. Thanks for joining us and staying with us, Greg. And Mosidi, do we still have you on the line?
Yes, I'm on the line.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so Mosidi, we've been talking, and in the previous part of the show, we were talking about your experiences in China as part of the Shapers visit that you recently did there with, if I'm not mistaken, 7 of your other colleagues.
Yes.
We're now going to shift gears a little and start talking about this whole savings culture and what that savings culture is and what, you know, what it means for us in the South African context. Now, while we were trying to get you on the line, we did have some brief conversation with Greg about, you know, the global phenomenon of savings. I do think the reality is, and I think we all know this, that there is definitely a lack of a savings culture in the South African environment, and I think we can honestly say that that's partially probably a cultural thing, but I think more fundamentally it's an economic thing where people go, I just don't have enough to save. I mean, Mosidi, what did you see? Because China has some interesting profiles across the economic perspective. Are people with low income also saving, or are they deferring the concept of saving on the back of, well, I just can't afford to save? What did you see?
So I think what was quite imminent was this versus the spend first then save mentality, because it's so easy to spend. But what the Chinese had gotten right was making it easy and convenient for people to invest using mobile platforms. But then before that, most people would either, if they could afford it, take their money offshore or invest in property. In fact, the property market there was quite like there was this massive bubble, and there still is this massive bubble. And the perceptions of people there for property being a good store of value is very imminent, to the point where they had to curb households to be allowed only to be allowed to buy 2 properties, because there were some that could just buy more than 2 houses, because of like the level of wealth that just came up in the past couple of years in China. But then the lower income people were left to save their money in their bank, which had very, very low returns. So on average, like about 2.2% per annum, which is really low. But what happened in the past couple of years is, as these mobile platforms became eminent and sophisticated, they developed a very innovative wealth management platform. So the one that's quite well known is the one called Youbao, which is owned by Alibaba's and financial investment management company. Now, Youbao is actually the world's largest money market fund currently. They have in excess of about $210 billion dollars in assets under management, and I think they said in the first 9 months, It took them 9 months to have about $90 million or something in assets under the management, because we were offering interest rates that were much higher than the bank. Not even like prices by margin, but much higher than in the bank, in a conveniently accessible way. And you could also get the money out, but then it's easy for you to set up this account and just stash the money away. So that's been an interesting way by which a lot of people that were now saving in the bank accounts, so lower income earning ones, migrated their savings into these yoga accounts. And quite a large number of the population actually needs them. So it would be, but it was trying to also, I think, what we must give ourselves credit to is that we have a far more open economy, which allows several players to compete in offering products and savings for people to save, and there's greater disclosure on what their returns are, and things like what inflation is. Like, it's not very well reported what the inflation rate is in China. Many people say that they have an inflation target of 3%, but the perception of people is that it could be much higher than that. So meaning that if there are any investments that say are giving 3.6%, but then the inflation is actually higher than that, then they're getting suboptimal returns with the money that they're putting away. Whereas with us, we have a lot of products that can beat inflation. We know what inflation is. And so that provides confidence in the investment environment. For economies like South Africa, whereas in China it's more closed, and they have very few options other than the bank to invest their money, and there isn't a lot of knowledge and sophistication amongst a great chunk of the population around what their options are. And they have a very low offshore allowance as well, of $50,000 that you can legally take out of the country to invest. So things like that, like, kind of make us in a good state to be able to say we actually have quite a conducive environment to save money and get returns over the long term. The options are there, and in South Africa, by most fund providers, they are really good compared to economies like in China.
Now, I mean, from the perspective of that, let's call it that savings culture, and let's call it the ability to beat inflation is from a savings perspective. I mean, I guess the reality is, if you've got a low inflation rate, you don't have to have a great return on your savings to beat inflation and stay, you know, let's call it static in the environment. High inflationary environments generally put pressure on savings just because of let's call it the consumption scenario that one faces. What did you see in your China experience that you could kind of bring back to the South African environment? I mean, what were the things that encouraged people to save, and perhaps things that didn't encourage them to save? I mean, you talked about earlier the ability to make payments easily and effortlessly. But I mean, that's also still a decision. You know, if somebody makes a decision to pay, they make a decision to pay. You know, the reality is that, you know, that's a decision that the person is making at a point in time. What did you learn about, let's call it the human psyche around savings that you perhaps can bring back to us?
Yeah, I think it's about making it. For me, I think it's important to create safe spaces for people to talk about money. Our relationship with money is 90% behavioral. So what our perceptions of how we see it, is it a tool for what? Is it something we matters to have in the long term, and for what? So it differs from person to person. So I think it's very important to kind of we should create safe spaces of people to help each other around understanding what is your money story, Richard, what is your money story, Greg, and what can I learn around how you going about building wealth for yourself. What are your everyday habits and things you swear by that have worked, things that haven't worked, and then we learn from there. And it doesn't matter. The same challenges that we have here were not unique to the people that I spoke to in China. And also the whole thing around in being behavioral. Some of the people that, you know, that were saving enough, they understood very well. They invested time in getting knowledge around how can I make my money work for me? What are some of my options? And then there were some that were saying, like, they're very stringent around delaying gratification. So they're willing to live on 40% of their income and save the rest, or the other way around, so that they, because they know that they don't need to have nice things all the time. So the things that compete with our savings. So we to put every 500 rand to it could have been 500 rand in a unit. So understanding that trade-off very well, that every time I go and I swipe my card, it's a trade-off between me putting the money away for the short or medium or long term, or getting that thing that I want now. So it's actually like mostly behavioral around how we see money and what we want to do with it on an individual basis.
So, you know, if I hear you right, I guess my question is, then is a savings behavior a cultural thing? Is it a economic issue? I guess it's a blend of a number of elements. But then the question becomes, okay, so what does this mean for us in South Africa, and particularly for us as South African businesses? What should we be learning from what's happening in China? So I guess if I have to be opportunistic in my thinking, I'm going, well, what you are learning is that if people have the payment methodologies, they will spend.
Yes.
So encourage the development of payment methodologies. And if you're not in the payment space, make sure you take as many payment methodologies as you can in your retail space, wherever you are, because you're going to maximize people's spending capabilities. I guess that's a little bit of a working against the whole principle of encouraging savings. But I mean, at the end of the day, that's an interesting observation.
Yeah, I think it's about through educating people around the benefits of saving, making it desirable. But understanding that, you know, in South Africa, we don't have, not everybody is part of this rich, growing middle class. There's a small segment of this population. A lot of people live in very constrained budgets because of, like, you know, family dynamics, the number of dependents that have to rely on one salary. So it's also about understanding that context and trying to see, like, you know, providing relevant context to that context as well. Like, I can't go to somebody who has to feed, you know, 5 months in a family earning, say, 5,000 rand per month and putting 15% and say 15% of your income. It's like when you unpack the dynamics there, it may be very challenging for them to do it, but it's about, in with your constraints, how do you better manage those resources, and what are some of the tools that can bring you out of that circle of 5,000 rands and maybe increasing it by 2,000 or 3,000 rands more. When you have that 2,000 or 3,000 more, how do you manage it? So in South Africa, we kind of have a one-size-fits approach. Also, for me, I was in a first-tier city in Shanghai, where most of the people there are earning fairly good salaries and have fairly good jobs. It would have been an interest to go in the more rural areas that are still developing, and we have people working in factories, and they're also not earning as much as the people in the city. And trying to understand their context as well and what's come up with it. But I think in the context of South Africa, it's about making it desirable for people to save, but also having context around what it means for somebody living in Sandton versus what it means for somebody living in rural countryside. How do you make it easy? The cost of saving and investing in the right product, where possible, just as from the person living in Sandton versus the person in countryside.
So, Greg, so we've spoken quite a bit about making consumption behavior attractive, and I'm sure that in the field that you work, especially with fintechs and with all kinds of technology development spaces, are you aware of any platforms that are being developed locally in which, you know, becoming a saver becomes desirable, becomes easy? Because we all know that the easier something is to do, the higher the probability is for people to take on that behavior.
I bumped into a couple of guys that advise individuals on how to become a saver and responsible consumption behavior. In terms of technology, I haven't really come across it too much. I think it's important to realize, you know, Keynesian economics, and acknowledge that, you know, C plus I plus G equals economic growth. So government spending, individual business spending, and consumer spending. So I don't know so much about much about South African politics, but in the U.S., when Bill Clinton came into office, when George Bush came into office, when Obama came into office, they were told, you want to encourage the people to spend, because if they don't spend, you have an economic decline in the short term, and that's bad for business if you're a politician. And I think that I think governments around the world are taking that track. They want to encourage consumption because it does stimulate economic growth and it does create jobs by de facto.
So it sounds almost as if all the factors are rearing against a culture of saving. So there's this talk of a culture of saving, but all the things that we're doing is kind of counteracting the creation of that culture. Liandi, I know that there's something that's very, very, very important to you. You're very passionate about, and that's purpose. And in terms of creating a culture of saving in business, do you see a connection between purpose and creating a culture of saving?
So that is a brilliant question, and I'd like to just share my experience on that. I just had a quick chat with Greg about, you know, the culture of saving in South African business versus what that is in the U.S. And Greg mentioned that in you know, the culture of saving in the U.S. is very much you have a standard buffer of cash flow, whether personally in your savings account or in business. I know that you know, there's no less than 3 months or more in terms of cash flow reserve sitting somewhere earning interest, but you can draw on it when necessary. You don't need to go for bridge finance, et cetera, et cetera. I think the more, in my experience, the more that we become purpose-driven, we become aware of our values, we become aware of risk mitigation around what our purpose is and how our values govern those in smaller businesses busy growing and scaling, that will definitely come to pass. I haven't seen a direct correlation yet, but I would like to make the assumption and say, yes, I do think that the moment you are clear about what you are about, what you stand for, what your values are, and that becomes part of your risk mitigation strategy. South Africans, we have a consumer behavior where we spend because we have a sort of I don't want to say a poverty mentality, but we come from a sort of a world of lack, moving into understanding what that world of generating abundance and wealth is. And then over and above that, you have elements like, you know, the ease of spend has become so much more the norm because of the various, you know, fintech advancing and so forth, and it's becoming easier to make payments in an instant. I have noticed, though, it's been interesting over the past few years how, you know, various banks, you know, trying to offer products, making it easy to invest and save.
But even then, Liandi, I mean, like, the return that you get on your saving remains paltry, to put it mildly. So, and like, you know, I know the one bank, I don't know if I'm allowed to mention brands, they've got this bank your change kind of thing. It's not big ticket kind of things that is really, really going to make you want to pool your resources and align it with something that is important to you and primary to you, whether you're an individual or whether you're a business. And like, it's almost as if we're sitting. We've interviewed many people on the show who've got ways in which and platforms in which to spend money to exchange money across borders and all those kinds of things, but it seems as though there's a gap in how to save money faster.
Can I interject in that, or just add on the comment around how can we maybe enhance these platforms that allow us to kind of consume conveniently? I think like things like your Facebook and your change are a great step forward for the banks to do that. It's kind of like this forced saving mechanism, and it's unconscious. And this money adds up. Like, I've been with my bank now since January last year, running this Save Your Banking, and it's sitting at about 2,100 now, unconsciously. And what I'm planning to do with that is to take it out and put it in the market so that it can grow more. So it's about then, how do you automatically do that? So now that you've unconsciously gathered these little bits of things every day, design a goal that you can use towards allowing it to grow more, and then incentivize yourself to add more towards that. Now what was once a savings now becomes an investment product, and that changes everything. And as a person, then take pleasure in seeing this money grow and so forth.
I also think that adds a lot of, you know, it's relevant to what is coming right back to. What is the perception of value? What is the perception of money? Why do we need to save if you come from a culture of spend? We don't really think about risk management and risk mitigation until the shit hits the fan, quite literally. So how do we educate and start having those conversations around why should I start incrementally putting money away?
And specifically, you know, I want to just focus this on the business side of it as well. I mean, business and addressing the savings need is one element, but business is saving at the same time. I mean, I often worry when I, particularly in our business, you know, in the finance team, we go out there, we talk to clients, and they say, look, I'm having some issues and this is my concerns, and you look at their numbers and you go, you know, you're on the 10th of the month and you don't know you're going to make payroll at the end of this month. And that just, you know, I kind of look at it and I go, my goodness, you know, if you're running your business like that from a cash flow perspective, my goodness.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah. Sorry, Leanne, am I taking away your thunder there?
No, this is just what I see on a daily basis.
And what is so concerning is, I mean, if I'm seeing it and you're seeing it, and we're just two people and individuals that work with businesses out there, I wonder how much of this actually does happen where people are... As I say, I mean, literally living as businesses on the bleeding edge of their cash flows. And I kind of look at this and I go, whoa, that's scary.
I was sitting with clients last week. They provide business rescue services and other things. And they say small SMEs, so it's anywhere up to what Peter, about $500 million in revenue down to you know, the small company. 80% of them are in distress. So in distress, I think, is defined by less than 30 days cash flow. Now you flip the coin, and I actually have a question for Richard. Bill Gates took a lot of pride in attracting his mates to come in and work in Microsoft in the early days, but he wanted to make sure, I got to be able to pay my mates if I'm going to get them into the business. So he accumulated 18 months of cash into the business. But in South Africa, if you're being taxed on every rand of profit, from the first rand of profit, how do you accumulate 18 months of cash flows without having massive margins or massive growth?
I think that is probably one of the biggest issues that, you know, I see. That, you know, we have government turning around and saying they, you know, they're pro small business, they're pro savings, etc. But I don't see practical, let me call it, acknowledgement when it comes to the, for example, the tax base, as a classic example, of how they are encouraging small businesses to save. So, I mean, an opportunity like saying, okay, if you put, you know, 1 month's equivalent of your expense base away in a, you know, savings account for, you know, tax-free savings account for your business, you know, you're going to be allowed that as an expense deduction for, you know, in the first 3 years of your business's life or whatever it may be. There seems to be a lot of focus on how much can be extracted from business. And yes, maybe that works in the big business. But the reality is, in the smaller business, there aren't enough incentives to drive, let me call it, the risk mitigation to ensure the success of the small businessman.
So you're triggering a very strange thought that's running in my head. You know, you have disruptive organizations like Uber come along and they challenge the legislative framework that, you know, in which the transport and passenger industry runs in. It almost sounds as if we need disruptive innovation to come into the saving space to really create that kind of paradigm where you are really, really rattling the cages so that savings, particularly in small business, can become something that is normalized in a way that, you know, it's aspirational, because at this point in time, consumption is aspirational. It reflects so many things about you, whereas savings hasn't got the same kind of, you know, headspace.
It's like, you're a successful businessman if you've got the BMW
the
and Mercedes. The BMW and Mercedes Benz parked in the CEO or entrepreneur's parking space, as opposed to having 2 months of cash flow sitting in a bank account to make sure that your employees and expenses are covered. I mean,
I still think 2 months is
very slim, right?
No, but it's very thin. I mean, I'd like to see 3-4 months plus, but. I'd take 2 months at this point, based on what I know.
Yeah.
So, Masidi, I mean, you obviously saw some challenges in that Chinese space. I mean, what we're talking of from a business perspective, did you see the similar sort of things in the Chinese world, or didn't you delve into that in any way?
Sorry, could you repeat that again, Richard?
So, did you see a similar challenge with businesses and savings, or the lack of savings in China? What was your experience on the business front?
I spoke mostly to individuals working for mostly young millennials that were students because of the language barrier, and then people that were working for business, so couldn't get much context around that.
Okay, great.
So, Richard, just on that, interestingly, I just want to come back to Safia's point quickly. Is one of the things that we, in terms of that disruptive savings culture that we could potentially do, one of the things that Race Corp also does is we work very much with the entrepreneur on their relationship with money. So it's not just a personal thing. It's very much what is the business owner and the leadership's relationship with money.
Yeah, so I mean, like, if you're looking at Maslow's hierarchy of needs and how money bleeds into all those various levels, it's an inescapable thing that whether you're a leader of a business or the head of a household, you have to come to terms with your money story.
Absolutely.
Well, I was going to say, so my relationship with money is pretty tight. It keeps waving me goodbye. And how many business people have that experience? They run their business for the entire month. They get to the end of the month. They pay everybody. And when they're done, they look at what's left over and they kind of go, wow, okay, well, that's not a lot. You know, like, hold on, I got to pay myself here. The one thing that I learned fairly recently from somebody, which I thought was a great principle, and it applies both in our personal lives and can be applied in our business, is to, when you're looking at any sort of income or revenue flow or profit generation, the first thing you should do is you should say, I'm going to take 10% of what I generate, being at income, profit in my business, etc., and put that aside.
Put it away.
So my challenge to business people out there is to say, and especially the startups, SMEs, smaller businesses, is to say, take the first, not the last, the first 10% of the money that you of the profits that you generate every month, put the cash aside, not just a book entry, put the cash aside in an investment account or in an appropriate investment product. Again, you should be doing the same in your personal life, so that when those rainy days do come, and I know we may be complaining about water in Cape Town and other places, but trust me, the rains do come, and when they come in floods often. Okay, that's not the time to be going, hey, I wish I'd saved 10% of my earnings every month and move forward. Well, it's been really interesting to talk about the savings culture and all the elements that flow from it. Masidi, thank you very much for your time. I trust that you had a great experience in China. I've had the privilege of spending a little bit of time in China, in Shanghai, in Beijing, and a few other places in China. And definitely quite a cultural shift that one has when you spend time in the Far East. So thank you very much for sharing your experiences with us. To my panel, to Lundi, to Greg, to Safia, thank you very much for your inputs and insights. Really do appreciate it. Next up, the Youth Leadership Platform. Stay with us.
This is CliffCentral.com.